Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, Californians began to receive ballots in the mail and began voting in the presidential primary on both the Democratic and Republican side. On the Republican side, voters essentially have a choice between Donald Trump and Nikki Haley. They have to make that choice by Tuesday, March 5th. This week, Nikki Haley making her first campaign appearances in California. She's holding a big fundraiser in Northern California and Southern California and two public events in Costa Mesa and Hollywood. We caught up with her to talk about the state of her campaign, to talk about her relationship with Donald Trump, Joe Biden, her mother, what motivates her, all that in this conversation. A little later in the show, we talk with Christina Pascucci, the Democrat running for U.S. Senate, former TV journalist. But let's start things off with Nikki Haley, one-on-one, in full, in Costa Mesa.
Governor Nikki Haley, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
People are voting now in California, which is kind of wild, but it sort of feels like the beginning of this campaign, and there's still a lot of people in this state that don't know you that well. So maybe this is an opportunity to give an introduction to the people of California, a little bit about your story and about why you decided to run for president.
You know, born and raised in rural South Carolina, was an accountant, went on and defeated the longest serving legislator in a primary when I ran for the state house, and really fought for transparency, ethics reform, all of those things. Ended up running for governor as a Tea Party candidate against a lieutenant governor, attorney general, very popular congressman, and a state senator. We won that, ran two terms, and then was appointed ambassador to the UN in the Trump administration. And bottom line is, I think we need an accountant in the White House. I know what it's like to run a government and clean it up. Mm-hmm. As governor, we did that. We went from 11% unemployment to 4%. We passed voter ID, tort reform, pension reform, the toughest illegal immigration law in the country, and then went on to the UN. And I dealt with Russia, China, and Iran every day. This is a time where, you know, I think we need someone who knows domestic policy. We need someone who knows foreign policy, but we also need someone who knows fiscal policy. Mm-hmm. Because we look at our debt and we look at our economy and we know something's got to give.
You know, the challenging part of this race is you're running against somebody who has 100% name ID, right? And so that's hard. We see in some of the polls recently, you're down 40% in this state, 40, 50% nationally. How do you overcome that? What is the specific path where you end up as the Republican nominee?
I mean, look at what we've done. We had 14 candidates in this race. I've defeated a dozen of the fellas. Mm-hmm. I got one left. Mm-hmm. We were at 2% in Iowa. We finished with 20%. We got 43% in New Hampshire. But think about that. The Republican incumbent, Trump, didn't get 43% in New Hampshire. Now we're focused on South Carolina, and then it'll be Michigan and Super Tuesday. This is the opportunity for voters to say, do we want more of the same or do we want something new? More of the same is not just Joe Biden, it's also Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. You look at the fact that 70% of Americans don't want to see a Trump-Biden rematch. The majority of Americans disapprove of Trump. The majority of Americans disapprove of Biden. Both of those men put us trillions of dollars in debt that our kids are never going to forgive us for. And are we really going to have a country in disarray and a world on fire and have our two candidates be in their 80s? Because we need someone who can serve 8 years strong, disciplined to get our country back on track. And I think people want a new generational leader.
What is California's role in all that? More delegates than anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, I think California is very important. I mean, you've got citizens who understand that our debt is out of control, that we only have 31% of eighth graders in our country proficient in reading. We have an open border that's a national security threat every day that no one is doing anything about it. You've got lawlessness in our streets, and you've got a world on fire. And what I will tell you is, I voted for Donald Trump twice. I was proud to serve America and his administration. But the truth is, chaos follows him. Mm-hmm. And we can't have, you know, four more years of chaos and survive it. And the second thing is, there will be a female president of the United States. It will either be me or it will be Kamala Harris. If Donald Trump is the nominee, Joe Biden wins and gives it to Kamala Harris.
How do you know that? Why do you say that?
Well, I think, first of all, everybody knows Joe Biden's not going to finish four more years. I mean, you can look at him. He's changed a lot in the last 2 years.
He would disagree with that. Yeah.
No, I think he knows exactly what he's doing. Kamala can't defeat Trump, and they know that. Biden can. And so that's just a reality. But look at the general election polling. In every one of them, Trump is down, down 7, down 9. On his best day, it's margin of error. He might be up by 2. That's another nail biter of an election. And we've seen what happened in 2018, 2020, 2022. He lost all of them. You look, I'm in every one of those same general election polls. I defeat Biden by up to 17 points. Mm-hmm. That's bigger than presidency. That's House, Senate, governorships. But think about that. That's a mandate going into D.C. to stop the wasteful spending and get our economy back on track, to get our kids reading again and go back to the basics in education, to secure our border, no more excuses, and to make sure we're preventing war and make our world more safe. That's what Americans want, is they want to go and right the ship on this. We've got to do it.
But to that point, and that is definitely true, you look at the polls and you are a stronger candidate. Yeah. But then you look at the voting in some places, and we saw what happened in Nevada this week, where no other candidate, you know, got more support than you. I know that's a state where there aren't any delegates, but does that situation in Nevada hurt a little bit?
No, I mean, Nevada, it's such a scam. They were supposed to have a primary. Trump rigged it so that the GOP chairman, who's been indicted, would go and create a caucus. We knew months ago that we weren't going to spend a day or a dollar in Nevada because it wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't even count Nevada. That wasn't anything we were looking at. We knew that was rigged from the start.
Sure.
Our focus is on South Carolina, Michigan, Super Tuesday. So if you look what we did in Iowa and you look what we did in New Hampshire, we're continuing to grow. That's what matters, I think, more than anything else. But look at what happened this week. Mm-hmm. Here you have Republicans lost a major vote on the border.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans lost a major vote on Israel. Donald Trump was found that he will not have immunity in all of these court cases coming up. The RNC chair is fired.
Mm-hmm.
All of this chaos is happening around us, and Donald Trump's fingerprints are on every bit of it. We can't continue as the Republican Party to go forward with this chaos. You don't defeat Democrat chaos with Republican chaos. Mm. And that's why we've got to see a change.
To that point about the border, because that is a big deal, right? We had a situation where there were a lot of Republican conservatives in the Senate who negotiated a deal, the strongest border deal in decades, which would also give funding to Ukraine, also give funding to Israel, and it's not going anywhere right now. If you were president, would you support that deal? We know it's not perfect, and right. There never is perfect right. When you're doing a bipartisan compromise, but on balance, would you support that deal?
Two issues with the border deal. First of all, it was good in that it strengthened asylum charges. You know, the whole catch and release, it strengthened that needs to be done. It didn't have remain in Mexico, which is important. You want people to not step foot on U.S. soil to begin with. And it had a 5,000 person threshold. We don't want to see that. The point is you stop it immediately. The problem is, here you have President Trump saying, don't do anything until the election. America's acting like it's September 10th. We better remember what September 12th felt like. It only takes one person. It is irresponsible to say they shouldn't do anything. That bill was not perfect. What they should do is go in a room and figure it out. They should not go home for 2 weeks. Mm. They should finish it. Trump needs to stay out of this and let us get a deal that works. But it was incredibly irresponsible on his part to try and stop it. It's incredibly irresponsible for Congress to leave and not get it right in the first place.
And then you also have a situation where Israel funding failed. Ukraine funding may never happen. As somebody who is so focused on foreign policy, what is America's place in the world and what happens to our national security if Congress doesn't fund Israel, doesn't fund Ukraine, and doesn't fund the border?
Well, first of all, Trump is causing chaos in Congress now, too. We see that, and that's a problem. But you have to understand, this is about preventing wars. I saw every day at the UN, terrorists, thugs, and dictators always tell us what they're going to do. They're amazingly transparent. Hamas said they were going to go into Israel. They did. China said they were going to take Hong Kong. Happened during COVID. Russia said they were going to invade Ukraine. We watched it. China says Taiwan is next. We better believe them. Russia said once they take Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. Those are NATO countries that immediately puts America at war. This is about preventing war. It's always been about preventing war. My husband is a combat veteran that served in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. He's deployed now. The last thing we want is our men and women to go to war. If we just gave Ukraine the equipment and ammunition they needed to win, that's only 3.5% of our defense budget. We've got to focus on the fact that we've got to stop terrorist activity, We can't let Putin start a war that's going to include all of us. We have to prevent that. But at the same time, I don't think we should give countries cash because you can't follow what you can't hold it accountable. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need troops on the ground. But let's be smart. This is about preventing war. Mm-hmm. And right now, you've got so much distraction happening in America. And we know when America's distracted, the world is less safe. And that's playing out as we see it.
Can you talk to us about what it means for you to have your husband deployed, how that shapes your worldview, and how it is on a human level doing what you're doing now without him here?
You know, I mean, I dropped him off 7 months ago at 4 a.m. And I watched him and 230 soldiers pick up their two duffel bags of belongings to go to a country they'd never been, all in the name of protecting America. Mm-hmm. They're willing to sacrifice their lives and their families mm-hmm. because they still believe in this amazing experiment that is America. So if they're willing to sacrifice for us there, shouldn't we be willing to fight for America here? Mm-hmm. Because we have a country to save. So while he's there, I'm fighting here. At the end of the day, we're doing this. We don't want our kids to live like this. Mm-hmm. I don't want anyone's kids to live like this. We can't continue down this path of anger and division and negativity and not getting things done. We've got to have a new generational leader that leaves the negativity and the baggage behind and focuses on what we're gonna do to make America strong again.
You know, the only Trump you've debated so far was the fake Trump on SNL.
I've been trying to get him to debate me and he refuses to do it.
Have you heard from them after that offer on national TV? Any progress on that?
On a debate?
Yeah.
I mean, Trump won't do it. We've said we want him to debate right away. And think about what that says. The fact that he didn't get 43% of the vote in New Hampshire. He only got 1.5% of the vote in all of Iowa. And he's saying, he says anybody that supports me will be barred permanently from MAGA. Mm-hmm. If you're running for president, this is about addition. It's not about pushing people out and saying they can't be in your club. Then he goes and pushes the RNC to name him the presumptive nominee. Mm-hmm. We don't do coronations in America. We need 48 states and other territories to vote. That's been the issue from the very beginning. But think about, our disclosures came out as well. He spent $50 million in campaign donations on his personal court cases. He has said he's going to spend more time in a courtroom than he will campaigning for president. Is that really what we want going forward? Because the world is on fire and our country's in disarray and we can't have that. All he has done is talked about revenge and how he's a victim. He's never once talked about the American people. That should send a chill up everyone's spine.
All that being said, is he still better than Joe Biden?
Well, I think at the end of the day, we know that we don't want to have a President Kamala Harris. The problem is he can't win. In any of these general election polls, he can't win. And that's without all these court cases decided yet.
You're saying Trump can't win.
Trump can't win.
Yeah, but you and still, so would you vote for him over Biden?
I will always vote for the Republican nominee over Biden.
Back to the SNL thing. How did that happen? Did you reach out to them? Did they reach out to you? And did you hang with J-Lo backstage?
So there will be a time and place I talk about that, but it's not going to happen during this election.
Was it fun, though?
It was a great time. They were very kind to us. It was just, we couldn't have asked for a better situation. And it's a lot of fun. Look, politics shouldn't be so serious all the time. We have to lighten up. We have to understand that we shouldn't live, breathe, and eat politics all the time. And so, it was good. But it was also making a point. Trump needs to debate me.
And it was well said. And to that point, we do something on our show called Personal Issues, which is 30-second rapid-fire questions to get to know your personal favorites away from politics, show some places where we can get along, okay?
Yeah, okay.
So here we go. What is your favorite TV show?
Ooh, Yellowstone.
Okay, good answer. Most Republicans say that.
It's a great show.
Favorite movie?
Favorite movie, Shawshank Redemption.
Great choice. Favorite musician or band?
Joan Jett.
Nice. Who is your all-time favorite athlete?
So I love Clemson football, obsessed with Clemson football. Favorite athlete. And I loved tennis. I mean, growing up, it was Chris Everett because I loved tennis. Now I love Clemson football. So Coach Dabo is like a favorite of mine and any of the players on the Clemson team. But
Who is your role model?
My role model. It has always been my mom.
Why is that?
My parents come from India, and she was named one of the first female judges in India. She was a lawyer. And because of the time, she couldn't sit on the bench. It didn't happen. Mm. And to see that they left everything 50 years ago to come to America with $8 in their pocket because they wanted a better life for their family. Mm. For her to see me become governor, mm-hmm. and for her to see me be UN ambassador, and for her to see me run for president, I learned my toughness from her. I learned my grace from my dad. But aside from her, Margaret Thatcher is also an amazing icon.
What's the most important lesson your mom has taught you?
That don't ever let what makes you different slow you down. Mm. It's always, she would always say, your job is not to show people how you're different. Your job is to show them how you're similar. Mm. And I think that lesson, when I would get teased on the playground, followed me throughout my life. Because when you first have an issue, if you talk about what we have in common first, people let their guard down, and then you can actually solve the problem going forward.
Well, we both like Yellowstone.
Yes, definitely. Like one of the best shows on TV.
I'm a USC football fan, the wrong USC, University of Southern California.
Yes.
But it's so great to have you in California.
Thank you
so much. And
let's
really
go
appreciate
vote.
It.
Go to NikkiHaley.com. This is a chance to get our country straight. I hope all your listeners will do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it.
Good to see you.
Our thanks to Governor and Ambassador Haley, now to the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, former TV journalist Christina Pascucci. And we begin with a controversy involving her.
With us now to discuss that and more is Christina Pascucci, who used to work here as an anchor and reporter and then left us to run for the U.S. Senate as a Democrat. Good to see you, Christina.
Good
Welcome
to see
back.
You. Thanks for having me.
So what is the latest on this ballot mess?
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, just to put it into perspective for people, if you have your designation on the ballot, local television journalist versus not, we did polling on that and my numbers cut in half. It impacts my campaign greatly. It could also impact the integrity of the elections overall. It could change the outcome. If people aren't voting for me, they're voting for maybe the third place person, help them sneak into second place because it's such a tight race for second. So it has tons of implications. And more than anything, it just talks to the integrity of our free and fair elections. The Secretary of State is tasked with making sure that happens. She acknowledged the mistake, that's step one, but the damage to my campaign, we can't even begin to quantify that.
Yeah, and basically, she's basically saying at this point, there's nothing I can do, right?
Yeah, and we've been in touch. I mean, could we have, people say, why don't you sue? And could we have done that at some point? Sure, maybe, but it'd take months of litigation. Maybe you wouldn't get an outcome till after the election. And then when it comes to reprinting ballots, that would cost millions for taxpayers at a time we're in a deficit. So I just, things like this are very helpful to get the word out so that people know who I am, who our campaign is, and that it wasn't our mistake.
No, it was not your mistake. Let's talk about the big issue that the Senate was talking about this week,
yeah.
and then not talking about,
right.
which is the border. I know you've been there recently. There
yes.
was this big bipartisan bill that had been negotiated, which would toughen the border laws, toughen the asylum laws, put more money towards Border Patrol, and
right.
also fund Ukraine and Israel. And it went down in kind of spectacular fashion. Would you have supported that bill?
I think it's a start, for sure. There's such a crisis at the border. Something needs to be done. Did it have everything I would want, or were there things that maybe I wouldn't want? Sure. I think it didn't address the beginning of the migration crisis, for example, which is such an important piece of border legislation. By the time these migrants get to our border, it's way too late. But I think what I saw more than anything from what happened there was that we're so lost as a nation when we can't agree on anything. And not only should this issue have been solved a long time ago, but we need to come together and collaborate for the American people. And it feels like everyone is just trying to push their own agenda, their own talking points. And it's been party over people rather than people over politics.
Well, and that's what you're running to do, right, is
yeah.
to try to bring this bipartisan deals together. I mean, these are some of the most experienced bipartisan negotiators that were on this. They worked for months and months, and then people just didn't go for it. What would be different if you're in there? What could you do that they couldn't do?
Our system is so broken right now, and we need desperately people who are willing to go in there as moderates and reach across the aisle and collaborate and have that be part of their platform, because right now it's an us versus them, and it's a net loss for everybody. So what I think I would do, and what's uniquely positioned me, is my role as a journalist and storytelling and just building that collaboration from the time you get into office. You meet with all the senators, you see where you have common ground, and I think during that whole process of them negotiating, perhaps they could have included more people in the process to let Americans know how it was unfolding so that by the time it got to where they released the whole border bill, people felt more invested in it rather than just saying, not going to work, it's too conservative, it's too liberal, whatever, and then it just imploded.
Let's talk about another big headline of the week, which was President Biden not being criminally charged for his role in taking classified documents, mm-hmm. but the special counsel suggesting that he's had real bad memory loss. Are you concerned about that? Are you concerned about Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee?
I think 70% of Americans are concerned, at least, who didn't want a rematch between President Biden and former President Trump. And we do need a new generation of leaders. That's another part of my platform. We need a breath of fresh air. And I think people are craving it on every level of government because we see people consistently in their 70s and 80s who are running. And we need term limits. And I greatly respect President Biden. Am I concerned about some of the things I've seen? Yeah. And I think a lot of Americans feel that.
Do you think he should step aside? Do you think he should be the nominee?
I think that perhaps not.
Perhaps he shouldn't be the nominee.
Correct.
Yeah. Because you're concerned about his age. Let's talk a little bit more about you. Mm-hmm. You're running against three folks who are also older, who have been there
yep.
for a long time. Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, Barbara Lee, mm-hmm. all veteran lawmakers. We know from a style perspective, you've talked a lot about how you'd be different. From a substance perspective, how would you be different? Is there anything that they voted on, because they vote together 90%+ of the time, that you would vote against, for example?
Yeah, and you took it the words right out of my mouth. They voted together 94% of the time. They're essentially the same candidate, and they vote largely along party lines. I think it's so important in order to get the trust of the American people to vote on your conscience and when it doesn't follow your party, perhaps. And so, you know, securing the border is one example of that I'm very passionate about. It's not necessarily a thing that Democrats have been focused on. Some said there wasn't even an issue at the border. And that's something I'm prioritizing in my campaign. Mental health as well. It's personally important to me. I've talked to you about that before, how my own family member dealt with substance abuse and mental health issues. That's what led me to being a journalist, because I want us to understand what it's like to walk in one another's shoes and just to build compassion for our fellow human. And I think my experience in the trenches with Californians makes me so incredibly different, because I'm much more in touch with how these issues are impacting everyday people and how their quality of life has gone down. And so I have my finger on the pulse of that. I care deeply, and I have solutions based on decades of experience in the trenches.
And you're also going to have experience being a mom soon, right?
Yeah.
We got about a month and a half out or so.
Oh, my gosh. I was just at an event with a whole room filled with mothers and mothers-to-be, and my pregnancy hormones were raging. Yeah.
How are you balancing all this?
I'm so focused on my why. I care so deeply for our future generations. I want her future and her generation's future to be as good as possible. And when I look around right now, they deserve so much better. So I feel focused and resolute and clear in my mission.
You know, we like to play music on this show. And I know you and I agree that the best musical performance of the week
yep.
was Tracy Chapman
oh,
and
yes.
Luke Combs at the Grammys. Why did this moment move you so much?
She is incredible. You see the goodness in her eyes, in her soul, her gratitude of that moment, just this like comeback moment. Everyone loves a good comeback, right? And then you saw Luke when he was looking at her with his deep admiration, and it's a song that brings you back to a simpler time before social media, before the chaos and polarization that we see in America. And it was just one of those moments that hit you hard in the heart.
All right, Christina, thank you. Good luck on the campaign trail. Good luck with the pregnancy.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Christina Pascucci. Our thanks to Nikki Haley. Next week on The Issue Is, Senator Alex Padilla will be with us, plus the mayor of San Jose, Matt Mahan. And we'll see what happens between now and then. Thanks for listening to the show. Like us, subscribe, write to us in social media, and hope to see you next time for more of The Issue Is.